Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
You get the first ray of light and the last ray of light.
Peace and quiet, worth its weight in gold.
We're coming to you from Galaganban.
The whole of Nevertire are our neighbours.
Check out Corinda.
Welcome to Growin', to the club in the scrub.
I've lived in Gadigal all my life.
We drove into Lightning Ridge and I was coming home.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales. In this episode, we check out the Grawin Opal Fields, a place like no other.
The Grawin Opal Field was established in 1908 after the discovery of opal at Hammond Hill. In 1926, a second Grawin digging was opened and caused a rush of miners from Lightning Ridge. Within 18 months, the new Grawin field had gone from 4 to 166 miners on the site, which was only 270 metres by 270 metres. The fields grew again after 1928, when a large black opal named the Light of the World, weighing almost half a kilo, was found.
Welcome to Grawin, to the club in the scrub.
75, the floods were on, and the pub used to be up the top there near the playground where it is today, called the Blackfoot, and their price rise went in their beer, went up 15 cents. It went from 50 cents to 75 cents for a bottle of beer because of the floods. And then when the floods subsided, the beer stayed highly priced at 75 cents. So the locals got the shits about it, and a group got together and said, how about we find a spot and build our own?
Well, it started off really small. But we ran that place illegally, this place illegally, without a licence or anything for all those years. The police would even come and raid us. They'd take the grog and everything away, and we had a lot of people up here. We call it the winter mob. And they come up here when it's nice and cool in June or whatever, Easter time, and for a couple of weeks or a month or whatever. But a lot of them are lawyers and barristers. And so we found this barrister boat. Yeah. And we finally got this place. The only license we could get was the sports and recreation license. So that's why we built the golf course out here. We've got pool tables and a table tennis table and dart boards, and they gave us the license.
Only until 10 years ago we got concrete on the floor, but other than that it's dirt floors and just throw a bit of carpet over the top.
The club here has a landline and power. We rely on rainwater and bore water, but we do have power.
It's the meeting place.
And you all own it.
Yeah, it's community owned, community built. That's exactly right.
The ball was unbelievable. Everyone used to wait all year for the ball. And we used to pick a letter out, the alphabet letter out, of what everyone comes for. You know, what this year was J. They picked out the letter J. And so everyone got dressed up as something J. The lady that won it, two of them there was done up, and they had a little place just up here, and they were nurses from Newcastle. And they said, oh, what are we going to do? Anyway, they come down to the ball, and they had bandages from their head right to their toe, in fair digger bandages, and they had tomato sauce all over them, blood. They come as jaywalkers, and they won it.
New Year's, and then we have like the big day for show day, we have the big day for the Yabby races, but there used to be plays and all sorts of things that sort of all fallen by the wayside as all of the older ones have sort of dropped off and moved away.
you drive down to the Glengarry Hilton, and that's usually Thursday night, so we go there for tea. And then Friday night we go to Sheepyard for the pizza nights. Down here on a Sunday and then back here on a Wednesday. So there's only a couple of nights that, you know, we're not doing much, so.
But a lot of the tourists now, there's like, we've got two other pubs here, the Hilton and the Sheepyard. So there's three pubs in a small radius, and there's not many people that live on the field all year round, you know. Probably 300. The tourists are one that keeps us going now. Yeah. We need the tourists out here because it's, as you can see, the place, it's worthwhile coming out and have a look at.
All the characterful drinking holes of Grawen, the Club in the Scrub, the Glengarry Hilton and the Sheepyard Inn, are big draw cards for international visitors experiencing the outback and the opal fields.
My name's Sue and I'm at the Sheepyard Inn. I run the pub. I've lived out here all my life. Good spot to be. Freedom and then space and sunrises and sunsets. Well, we've got the Sheepyard Inn and it's in one of three pubs that we've got out here on the Opal Fields. It's just something you've got to come and visit to see what it looks like. We have mostly our people around here are sort of, some are only here for a couple of weeks over the year. Others are here all year round, but it gets too hot and we shut down over summer. So other than that, we've got our little store here with our opals and we cut them and we set them and all that sort of stuff. Just above ground for me. I get claustrophobic now I get old. Yeah, as a child it never worried me, but now it does.
What do you think makes a good opal cutter?
Patience and just being able to connect with your stone and try and read it and understand it and see what it's going to be at the end of the whole process. I prefer probably to freeform so you get the most out of your opal.
What's your favourite thing about working with opal?
Just your end result as much as anything, I guess, and just the fact that you can sit there and do what you're doing and no one annoys you.
Can you tell when someone's made a good find just by the way they're coming to the pub?
In the old days, what they drank used to make a big difference. Yeah, suddenly they'd be going up shelf instead of down shelf. But more often than not, people keep it quiet, they keep it to themselves. It's safer that way.
Big finds, big money, and rats down holes. Here's a collection of yarns from the opal fields.
When the opal was flat out, when everyone was getting opal here in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, there was a buyer who used to come here called Matty the Finn, and he trained the Bulgarian weightlifters for the Olympic Games, and he was Matty the Finn. And anyway, he was selling opal up at the pub up the top here. He used to always have a bloke there to count his money, and they'd be dealing in $100,000 cash, and he'd do it probably sometimes two, three times a day. And I was sitting there one day, and he said, "Hey, come over here, boy," he called me. He said, "Boy, get over here." He said, "Count this money." And I counted $120,000, and he gave me $200, and I went, "Geez, when are you doing that again?" Because the $200 was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, mate.
And I did it for him over about 3 years. I did it for him about four times, and that was only, you know, that's how much money it was about. And everyone had money. Your pocket was your bank, full of notes. $100 notes.
Everything's cash in hand out.
Yeah, everything's cash. I still deal in cash. I haven't got one of them fancy telephones. I got the phone down home. It's got a cord on it. And I got a bank book, and I go into Walgett and get $1,000 out when I want it. And that's it.
We've heard a lot of the Wild Wild West stories of, you know, back in the day when they were all mining and buyers would fly out with briefcases full of cash. And they'd have poker games at the pubs and, you know, it'd all be like $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 cash. And then, you know, stories of people disappearing because they haven't paid their dues, or, yeah, somebody's taken some opal, but, you know, whether that's actually true, whether there's bodies down holes, nobody's, you know, admitted to finding anything. But,
we get a lot of ratters out here. They come out and rat your mind. But we've caught them before and hog-tied them, give them a bit of a touch-up, hog-tied them, called the cops, thrown them in the back of the ute, meet the cops halfway, and get into trouble because you're not allowed to do that. And the people you catch, they take them to court and they get a slap on the wrist, and they're out here next week doing the same thing. Another bloke caught four ratters. They took off. He caught them halfway from here to Walgett, shot their tyres out in Cumbora, and, called the cops. They got them, but he got into trouble. You can't shoot people's tyres out these days and do stuff like that.
My name's Irene. Everybody calls me Reenie. And we're out here on the Growin Opal Fields in my little bush studio. This has been a little dream of mine for 20 odd years. And it was only just last year that I quit full-time work on the coast and came out here to make this full-time work. Opal is my birthstone. I have always loved fossicking and panning for all different stones and minerals, and opal being my birthstone, it was just a little connection to that, and that brought us out here, and we started mining and absolutely loved it, got the fever and stayed. This is all stuff that, my hubby and I have mined, It was actually a dinner party we went to at a mate's place, and they were like, oh, we know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who's selling an opal mine. You guys are into rocks. Do you reckon you'd be interested? And we went, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So we gave the guy a call and we said, heard about your opal mine for sale. And he said, have you ever been out there? And we said, no, never. And he said, okay, we'll go out there, stay for at least a week, go down the hole, dig. You can keep whatever you find, but you'll either love it or hate it. And I don't want you to buy it if you're going to hate it. So yeah, we came out, absolutely loved it, went back, bought it. And yeah, this claim that this bush studio is on was that claim that we bought 24 years ago. The first time we found opal was super exciting. We just had a little jackhammer and head torches on. And seeing the little glint of colour was just magical. And of course, you want to find more. So you're like, oh, what else is there? Keep going, keep going. And when you're underground and you're mining, you actually lose track of all time because you're on this little hunt to find the next stone. And yeah, it's amazing. You go down the hole and then you look up the ladder and it's dark outside and it's like, oh, whoops, what time is it? better get up there. Or the generator runs out of fuel and all your lights go off underground. So you kind of have to stop then, but it's very addictive. It's funny, but I always say I listen to the stone. So I kind of look at it and will sit there and read it for a little bit and then just, follow it. I get into a bit of a zone and it's like go with the flow and cutting it. And just cutting it to the point when I kind of feel like, okay, this is it, this is enough. And then, of course, the same goes for my jewelry as well. Once I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, what do you want to be? How do you want to be? You know, just a bit of a zone that I get into and cut away. I love working with silver, but I also do pieces in gold and rose gold. And those have been more custom pieces that people would like. But as I, build my little shop, I'll be building more stock with all the different golds and rose golds and things also. But silver for now. My biggest seller, actually, it's these little Pandora beads that I make. So they're made with the little opal chips and a bit of resin, but they fit the Pandora bracelets and, a little souvenir. That and also my hats. I hand burn all my hats as well. So they've been great. It's very dusty, lots of white dirt around, especially where, people have been mining. It's almost a bit of a moonscape, really. And especially when the full moon is out, it looks like a different planet altogether. But it's very chill. It's very laid back. You know, there's no traffic lights. I mean, there's dirt on the roads, but that's fine. You get used to that. But yeah, it's just a very chill place to be. We got the fever way back then and still have the fever. And I love Opal and love sharing, you know, our opals with people. And yeah, it's no regrets whatsoever.
So I've got opals there, I've had it all my life. I found a really nice piece when I was about 11. I'm 66, really young.
My old man just, he drilled a hole, a 4-inch hole, and he bought up the colour on 8 holes. So he just rang me up and said, do you want to come out and do some apple mining? So I was in my 30s and come out here, and the rest is virtually history.
I got one that's turned out to be a picture of Australia. It's an iridescent green on black. And that's just how the stone turned out to be.
It's called
a picture stone, if you call it anything like that. So I've had other friends had ones like rosellas or butterflies, all that sort of stuff. But mine's a picture of Australia, that's what that big. And I had a little Tasmania for about 30 years that matches it, so I got Tasmania as well.
It sits in the palm of your hand, doesn't it, Australia? Yeah. It's lovely. And then he's got another one that's...
fossilised fish.
And it does, it looks like a fish.
It is, an opalised fossil fish.
Digging one day in the dive, just belling out a new hole. I was going that way, had a mate going that way, and I found this crack in the roof. It was about 4 inches, 5 inches. And I stood on a 20-litre drum and looked down this crack, and it just kept on going. And these big chunks of opals reached in and pulled it out like that.
As soon as I seen it, I fell in love with it. And I bought a house and two mines for 20 grand. Fourth or fifth day, I borrowed a jackhammer and went mining in one of the mines that I'd bought. And I struck a bit opal straight away, and I've been here ever since. I was one of a million. Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah, you don't do it. Yeah, you don't do that. People have been here 30 and 40 years and got nothing.
But here is a lot easier than Lightning Ridges, I tell everyone, because it's seam country here. So you're actually jackhammering the dirt in the wall, and you might come across a bit of potch, and it will look like a seam line, and you follow that seam line. Like all jackhammers and everything get put down, and you just start sort of gouging.
Years ago when we were hitting it, when the mulga started, you'd be down the hole and you hear this bang, bang, bang on your ladders. Who the hell is that? The buyer. You got any opal for the sale? Yeah, they'll come and look them before you. We don't have to go to town anymore. They come out here looking for it.
Meet Sam Meehan. We talked to her about growing up in Groan and becoming a reality TV star.
Hi, my name's Sam Meehan. I'm an opal miner from the Groan Opal Fields. I'm a third generation opal miner, so it's been in my family for a fair long time. I absolutely love it, and I love the place that we live in. It's so unique, and it's nothing like anywhere else in the world. You have to be here to truly experience it. Basically, out on Groan, we live in camps and completely off-grid. So we basically have a community out there on the active opal fields. You drive in, you're in the middle of the bush, there's big box trees, there's mulga trees, there's a lot of wildlife and kangaroos, and then you also continue driving and you get to see the progression of opal mining. Basically, the main tourist road goes straight through the opal fields, so you get to actually see what us opal miners do, and you get to see the old machinery that they used to use back in the day, and you also get to see the machinery we're using today, opal mining. My grandfather started opal mining, and he did a lot of open cut mining. And then my dad's an opal miner, so he predominantly does underground mining, digging underground in one of our wonderful opal mines. And I spent the first 12 years of my childhood growing up on the Groan opal fields, and you could only imagine it was a really, really fun childhood living completely off-grid in the middle of the bush. I always love going down to the dam. So there's a whole heap of kids out there, and we used to go down to the dam and spend the hot days there swimming with all the dogs and swinging off rope swings. So it was pretty cool to be able to do that. And I just used to love riding the motorbikes all around and just spending the day with my friends, being able to explore the bush and have fun. The other thing was that we didn't really have mobile phones, so it was all about being there in the moment. When I was 12, I moved up to Brisbane. So the idea, get a better education, kind of see a little bit more of the world than just this wonderful little place that I currently live in. And then I went to uni, worked in marketing and journalism, and then 5 years ago I decided to come back like my family and say, I'm going to be an opal miner, and I've never looked back on what I decided to do. I definitely am not your stereotypical opal miner that people might expect to see. It's really, really special being a female in the opal mining industry and being able to do this type of work. I'm very lucky to be part of an international TV series called Outback Opal Hunters. So basically, they follow different groups of miners from all around Australia on the different types of opal fields, and really just gives us the opportunity to show what we really do out here. And opal mining hasn't always been that well known. It's been quite a secretive industry in the past, so it's pretty cool to be able to share the amazing things that we get to do and the amazing gems that we get to dig out. There was definitely a learning curve starting the show. Like, I hadn't really been filmed like that. When I first moved out here, I actually started doing a lot of TikToks and basically just showing my day-to-day opal mining. So I was used to being on my own camera, but it was definitely at the start very different to have someone else filming me. But it's really, really fun. There's fantastic people that come out. Basically, they just follow us around and share what we do. So being on the show has definitely opened up a lot more opportunities. When we're going opal mining, a lot of the time we're selling to buyers who then go and sell to the next person and the jewelers and things like that. One really cool thing that's come from the show is being actually able to kind of build a bit of a following online and sell to the direct customer. So it's great being able to sell an opal with a story behind it. So people purchase these opals, but they know the opal miners who have bought it, and they know where it comes from. So that's been a really cool and unique opportunity. In general, in terms of the impact on the community, it's definitely increased the tourism out here and the understanding of opal and just how special opal is.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.